The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's good to be back with you. I was thinking it was Friday, but actually it's Thursday. We've got one more day ahead of us before we close out the week. A couple of programming milestones. Well, it's the last day of April. That's what I was thinking of, the last day of this month. Where has the time gone? Even in the midst of a lockdown, the time still manages to go by fast. We have completed, after today's show, 25 programs in the month of April. I think that has to be some kind of a record for one month. And I also, when I was looking at my electronic files and the way that I save each document numerically, I noticed that I passed 1,000 programs. I think it was on the last day of Unleavened Bread, that program we recorded ahead of time for that that Holy Day presentation. 1,000 programs, that's for me personally. I think today's is number 1,012. If you look over at the kpcg.fm website, that of course includes all of our wonderful subs when they have filled in for me. And I think the number is at 1,231, soon to be 1,232. So we are moving on up 1,000 programs. And that's what, in 5 years? Well, we're coming up to our five-year anniversary now that I think of it. That'll be next week, next Tuesday or Wednesday, May 5th, 2015 is when we first started this program. Hard to believe. It's been 5 years. The Daily Death Tracker, can you guys show this? It's important to keep note. As of right this moment, 14,033,808 abortions have been performed so far this year. This year, over 14 million abortions. And have I mentioned before that the abortion clinics, that's essential activity during the lockdown. Those are open. Those are wide open. There's lots of babies to abort when we're all under lockdown. 14 million. We'll keep track of that as we go, just in case there's any dramatic action that we need to take. All of these lives snuffed out before they even get started, before they even have a chance. On yesterday's show, we talked about how that this COVID-19 disease, it takes aim at the elderly and the infirmed and all of these nursing homes that have just, well, I think there was another story today talking about how many outbreaks there have been in nursing homes, not just in the United States, but all over the world, all across Europe. Here in the United Kingdom, you may have seen the daily tracker for the COVID-19 disease. The UK, I think their figures yesterday, they were at about 600-700 per day. And then yesterday, it's what, 4,400 or 4,500? And that's as if right on cue following this program. That's because they've gone back and looked at all of the deaths from nursing homes since the beginning of March. And I think that added 3,800 deaths to the death toll here in the UK. All of these nursing homes that have just been pounded. We'll go back, if you will, and listen to or watch that program from yesterday on the nursing home massacre. Well, yesterday, I guess last night maybe, the big news, the unsealed court documents. I guess big news, it depends on how you look at it. The mainstream media would just, they'd just as soon you think about nothing else for the next several months but lockdown and disease. In any event, there were some important documents that revealed some information that, well, we've suspected it. We've really known it for years, haven't we? that Lieutenant General Mike Flynn was set up by Obama's deep state back in the early days of the Trump presidency. This is in January of 2017. Those two FBI agents that just showed up, and they didn't tell General Flynn that he was a target. They didn't tell General Flynn that he was being investigated. They were there to trap him. And who can forget Jim Comey a year or two later when he said, well, I just sent a couple agents out. How did you do this? He was asked. How did, and he even used the words, I got away with it. I took advantage of the Trump transition, the early days of the Trump presidency. He was asked by a reporter at MSNBC, you know, how did you get General Flynn the way that you did? And here was his response, clip two.
Something I probably wouldn't have done or maybe gotten away with in a more organized investigation, a more organized administration. The FBI wanted to send agents into the White House itself to interview a senior official. You would work through the White House counsel, and there'd be discussions and approvals and who would be there. And I thought, it's early enough, let's just send a couple guys over.
And everybody had a good laugh over that. The Trump administration, they were so disorganized at the time. Usually you have to go through all this protocol here and approval here. But, you know, we just sent a couple of agents. That's how I got away with it. He's the former FBI director. He was the FBI director at the time. Anytime you're using the words got away with something, you know they're up to no good. You know they're breaking the rules. And so we knew all along. It's just that yesterday, it was finally made known. Documents were revealed saying that they had this nefarious motive going in. They weren't trying to get to the truth. They were trying to get him fired. And then when the Mueller probe started, they took it a step further. They tried to get him thrown in jail for a lie to FBI agents. That never did happen. If you look back at some of the history, General Flynn served as President Obama's Director of Defense Intelligence Agency. That was back between 2012 and 2014. And in the middle or late part of 2014, he was forced out because of his strong dissent over President Obama's strategy in battling ISIS, or lack thereof. And, of course, he was very much against the Iran nuke deal and other things as well. But it was after he was ousted that Flynn went on to be a pretty outspoken critic of the Obama administration, even taking aim at Obama himself, which, I mean, that was forbidden. You can go after the deep state officials. You can go after a CIA director. You can go after an FBI director. But you don't go after Barack Obama. He is untouchable. In 2015, this was on Fox News, I believe, toward the end of the year, he was calling for an investigation into the, as he called it, the ISIS intel skewing scandal. There was some pretty sharp disagreements between the White House and the intel community about the ISIS threat. You'll recall that President Obama just kind of brushed it aside, saying that, well, that's just the JV and so on. It was scandalous what happened. And Flynn was saying at the end of 2015, there needs to be an investigation, and it needs to start, as he said, at the top. This is clip three.
The focus of this investigation ought to start right at the top. Where intelligence starts and stops is at the White House. The president sets the priorities, and he's the number one customer. So if he's not getting the intelligence that he needs, if he's not paying attention to what else is going on, then something else is wrong there between him and the advisors that he has.
It starts and stops with President Obama. He's the one that sets the priorities. And he's the customer. He's the one that makes use of the intel. So we need to look into what he's doing the decisions that he's making. That was Mike Flynn at the end of 2015. And then in 2016, of course, he joined the Trump campaign. For a while, I think he was being considered as a possible vice presidential candidate. That, of course, later went to Mike Pence. But then President Trump settled on selecting General Flynn as his first national security advisor. Here's General Flynn at the Republican convention. I think this was in Ohio in July 2016, clip four.
Tonight, America stands as one with strength and confidence to overcome the last 8 years of the Obama-Clinton failures, such as bumbling indecisiveness, willful ignorance, and total incompetence that has challenged the very heart and soul of every American and single-handedly brought continued mayhem, murder, and destruction into our neighborhoods and onto the world's streets.
Now, the Obama people, they absolutely despised this former official of theirs. They loathed General Mike Flynn. They wanted to destroy him, and you can understand why in some respects, just in listening to some of the things that General Flynn said at that convention. He was following Melania Trump's speech, by the way, so the arena wasn't quite as packed as it was for hers. But still, just listening to his remarks, here's one more tidbit, clip five.
I have called on Hillary Clinton. I have called on Hillary Clinton to drop out of the race because she put our nation's security at extremely high risk with her careless use of a private email server.
Now, later in that speech, the audience, like they did for Trump rallies, started saying, lock her up, lock her up. And he said, that's right. That's what should happen. So Obama's people hated him. Hillary Clinton, obviously, despised him as well. That gives you a little bit of background. And so then coming into the dramatic events from the end of 2016, of course, President Trump winning the election in November. And then you have the transition period. And then these phone calls, two or three phone calls that Mike Flynn made. He's the keep in mind, he's the incoming national security advisor. And he makes these phone calls to the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak, requesting that Russia delay the pending UN resolutions concerning Israeli settlements, which the incoming administration, President Trump's administration, would be against. This is something that's just routine. It happens all the time. You had Obama and his people before they even came into office, that transition period going back to 2008 and 2009, discussing all these future arrangements through back-channel negotiations with the Iranian mullahs. In any event, Flynn makes these phone calls, and as PJ Media reported later, government spies, this is while Obama's still in office, it says government spies were listening in on his innocuous phone conversations with Kislyak. His name was unmasked by someone in the Obama administration, and the contents of the call were leaked to the Washington Post, which remains the only serious crime to have emerged in the Russian investigation. This was the most serious crime of all, the leak. You'll remember, it was January 12th, 2017. The transcript of the call made public because the Obama people, they leaked it. And then you have all of the unmasking. And somehow in the midst of all of this corruption, it's the phone call that Flynn made with Kislyak, that's supposed to be the problem. That's what Jim Comey determined to be the problem. That's what Barack Obama determined to be the problem. And same with Bob Mueller and his team when they came along. It was reported in January that a high-ranking Obama official leaked this conversation to the Washington Post. And, of course, David Ignatius at the Washington Post, he was quite happy to reveal the contents of this classified discussion. That's the way it happened in 2016 and 17. Remember that? It still does to some extent, but it was just leak after leak after leak. Clapper leaking to CNN, Comey leaking to the New York Times, just one leak after another. And what did that lead up to? This again, it's in the last days of Obama and the first few days of President Trump. PJ Media says then, without mentioning that they were conducting a criminal interview, FBI agents Joe Patinka and Peter Strzok showed up at the White House on January 24th, 2017. So this is just 4 days into the Trump administration, to interrogate Trump's short-lived national security advisor. This was not a casual discussion. That's the way they made it out, though. They were there to interrogate him. They were there to entrap him. So he has this interview, and Andy McCabe, in a testimony a year and a half later, he acknowledged that General Flynn did not lie. He didn't think and he said the FBI agents, Strzok and the other one, that they didn't think he was lying either. But once the Mueller investigation got off and running, that happened later in the year, you'll remember. Well, then they went after it or looked into it again and determined that he was in fact lying to those FBI agents. And this really does illustrate, I think, just how much of an overreach that there was during the Mueller investigation, this seemingly never-ending investigation that was just turning up stones all over the place to try to find Russian collusion. They couldn't find anything. So as part of it, it was a wide net that they threw out there. And as part of it, they thought, well, let's just, he's already been fired. The Trump administration let him go because he wasn't, as Flynn himself said, I wasn't completely forthright about the conversations, but there was no lying. He didn't reveal everything to Mike Pence. So it was embarrassing for the administration. They let him go. But for Mueller and his team, that wasn't enough. They got to go back to this interview. That's the way it was sold. Actually, it was an interrogation. And they got to show that, well, he was lying. They needed to justify the existence of the special counsel because they weren't finding any Russian spies. They were doing a lot of spying, but they couldn't find any Russian agents in the Trump administration. So really, they set a trap for themselves in many ways. Or God set a trap for them, I guess, depending on how you look at it. They took it too far. Well, early on, with his first team of lawyers, they weren't quite as good as the current team that General Flynn has. When they went after him, they pressured him. I'm talking about Mueller's people now. Weissman and the others, they basically forced him into a plea bargain. And they said, look, you better accept this or else we'll come after your son as well. We'll go after your son. So Flynn's original lawyers, his original team, they surrendered, basically. And on December 1st, 2017, General Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to those FBI agents in that January 2017 interrogation. Well, somewhere along the way, Flynn got a new lawyer, Sidney Powell. She wrote the book License to Kill. It's an excellent book, by the way, if you ever get a chance to read it. But she decides to join General Flynn's team. And then, of course, along the way, you have Bill Barr show up in 2018. He's heading up the DOJ. He appoints Timothy Shea. He comes from the Eastern District of Missouri and says to Shea, look, you've got to look into this Flynn case. Make sure everything was above board there. And, of course, Barr has been He's been assigning quite a few federal attorneys to investigate the investigators because of all of this corruption. So Powell comes on board as Flynn's lawyer. She says, you need to retract your plea bargain and fight this out in court. You didn't lie. You need to fight these people. And while she's representing Flynn, she's pleading with federal prosecutors those representing the government's case against Flynn to turn over documents, discovery, and they wouldn't do it. So with Timothy Shea then stepping in to oversee this investigation, he finally gives to Sidney Powell this exculpatory evidence that had been withheld for years from Flynn's attorneys. Those documents were given to Powell earlier this week. They were under seal, seal of the court initially. But then when she got them, Sidney Powell filed for a new motion and said that, look, these new documents, they prove Mr. Flynn's allegations of having been deliberately set up and framed by corrupt agents. They prove our case. They show that this was unjust. Well, what happened yesterday is that those documents were unsealed for all the public to see. And some of them, they're handwritten notes. And I'm not sure if we know who wrote all of the notes. But these are the FBI agents involved in taking down Lieutenant General Flynn. And one of the notes says, what is our goal? Truth, admission, or to get him to lie so we can prosecute him or get him fired? That's what it says on one of the notes from one of these, not just some regular old field agent in the middle of nowhere America. These are the top agents at the Bureau in D.C. What's our goal here? Imagine as an FBI agent actually jotting down on a note to send to your fellow agent, is the goal here to get him to lie so that we can get him fired or even prosecuted? These are FBI agents. This is Jim Comey's FBI. This is Barack Obama's FBI. You know all about the other things, the text messages, what Comey bragged about in 2018. Oh, I just sent him over. Yeah, I just sent him over. This is how I got away with it. They're out there bragging about it. They're writing books about this. And finally, the truth is beginning to come out. These were dirty cops who wanted to destroy Mike Flynn because of how much the Obama administration absolutely loathed this individual. How dare he criticize Barack Obama? So these documents are unsealed, and of course people are now talking about it on talk radio and on the news last night, at least at Fox. I'm sure they're not very concerned about it on the other channels. But this was the goal from the beginning, and this is just the beginning, we should say. Sidney Powell, I think she was on Hannity last night, and this is what she had to say regarding other documents that she has seen but that have yet to be made public. Clip one.
The documents I've seen so far, in addition to the ones you have in your hands now, are even more stunning. It's just absolutely appalling what these agents and then the special counsel operation did to General Flynn. It's abuse of their authority at every turn. I can't thank Attorney General Barr and Mr. Jensen and Mr. Durham enough for having the integrity and fortitude to get to the bottom of this, because that's what it takes. These documents weren't easily discovered. The emails have been in the FBI the whole time, but the handwritten notes, as I understand it, may not have been. We still don't know exactly who the author of those is. But they're devastating evidence of the lengths they were willing to go to disregard all prior protocols, all prior rules, their standard practice in other cases to warn of a 1001 violation, all of that. None of that applied to General Flynn. They had only special violations of every protocol known for him because they were determined to take him out.
Abuse of authority, she says, at every turn. And for what reason? Because they were determined to take him out. To take him out. Now, I think it's important. Again, I say the major media is not going to be too interested in any of these developments. But the same people, for the most part, the same people who want to see the United States locked down forever are the same ones that wanted to take out General Flynn. They're the same ones that want to destroy Donald Trump. There may be a few exceptions here and there. But the ones who Jared Kushner calls them the eternal lockdown crowd. The eternal lockdown crowd. They just want a lockdown eternal. Now, if they got their candidate in office in November, they'd be changing their tune in a hurry. All right, then they'd be talking about revving up the economy again. Come on now, we've got to get that economy going. But the eternal lockdown crowd, they want to keep this going indefinitely. They don't want Americans going back to work. They don't want to return to normal. I guess you have to put normal in quotes, but you know what I mean. This morning, we had a few emails back and forth on me and the fellows about the reasons why the eternal lockdown crowd is so happy right now. Why do they want this to go on? Why do they refuse to change the subject from COVID-19 and lockdown to anything else? Well, for one, they don't want to see Obama's deep state crimes exposed. And right now, they've been largely forgotten. They don't want to be exposed. They like it when the deep state crimes are completely overshadowed by coronavirus. They're completely overshadowed by lockdown. Who cares about General Flynn? That's old news. Or Jim Comey. Oh, you're still on Comey. Is that it? John Brennan? Jim Clapper? And yet, when you look at some of these crimes, I've been going through a book slowly on Richard Nixon and the takedown of Alger Hiss back in 1949, 1950. And some of the crimes, he was a traitor. He was a traitor. And yet when you look at some of the crimes committed under Obama's watch, it's astounding that so many people can just simply brush it aside like it's no big deal. They want these crimes to be overshadowed. They don't want Attorney General Barr to get to the bottom of it, or John Durham, or anyone else. They're quite happy to have the whole world distracted right now. They were about to be exposed. Another reason they're happy right now is because America's economy is in a total freefall. And they have wanted this, and so many of them have stated it. They haven't even tried to conceal it. They've tweeted about it. They've written about it. In the case of Bill Maher, he was talking openly about it just a couple of years ago, wishing for, hoping for a recession. This is what he said 2 years ago, clip six.
I feel like the bottom has to fall out at some point. And by the way, I'm hoping for it because I think one way you get rid of Trump is a crashing economy. Yeah. So please bring on the recession. Yeah. Sorry if that hurts people, but
please bring on the session. The bottom has to fall out, says the millionaire commentator. Bring on the recession. If it brings down Donald Trump, it's worth it. In his mind, it's worth it. And so a government shutdown, a total economic shutdown, If you think about government shutdowns, by the way, those happen every couple years. I think Mark Levin might have made this point a week or two ago. But when those happen, you know, the media always side with the Democrats, who they start singing the sad song. We cannot have the government shut. And of course, a government shutdown is just like a little pause, and all the employees get their money, their benefits anyway. They just basically get a vacation for a few weeks. Those government employees during the government shutdown, a shutdown that's not even really a shutdown. And yet how many featured stories are there on the news talking about the suffering of government employees because Congress can't get a spending package together? You haven't seen that many stories like that during the total economic shutdown of the United States. The people who are suffering, the millions upon millions that have lost their jobs, that's because they want this. They want the bottom to fall out. They want the economy to shut down. They want people suffering. They want to keep America miserable. That could be their slogan this campaign season. Keep America miserable. Because they think it furthers their cause. The radical left is ecstatic right now. Another thing to note, they're ecstatic because they can blame all the misery of COVID-19 and all of the hardships of the recession. They can blame this on Donald Trump. He's to blame. And we've already played the clips on this earlier this week. The reporter who said, you know, do you deserve to be reelected because you've lost 50,000 Americans? They can keep attacking with this. They know. If they can keep the president on his back foot, if they can keep the president playing defense against their implacable and relentless attacks, then they're in a stronger position, they think. President Trump can't go to his popular rallies. Tens of thousands of people can't show up. And yet, polls even still talk about how enthused Trump's voters are as compared to potential voters for Joe Biden. Yet still, the goal here, coming from the radical left, make this election about COVID-19. Make it about the lockdown. Make it about President Trump's supposed failures. Certainly don't make it about any of his achievements from the first 3 years. Just focus on Corona. Another reason they're happy to see this extended is because it keeps Joe Biden hidden in his basement. They know they don't have a strong candidate. They know he's a politician in decline. And, of course, more recently, they know there's potentially skeletons in the closet. So the longer he's in the basement, the longer that the skeletons are in the closet, the better it works for them. There was an item at Newsbusters just this morning. The headline was, "Networks give Vice President Pence not wearing a mask. He went to the Mayo Clinic." Mayo, I said. He went to the Mayo Clinic, and he didn't wear his mask. And they've given that three times the coverage of the Joe Biden sex scandal. Can you believe this? The vice president doesn't wear a mask. And then they want to bury the Tara Reid allegations. They want to bury it. Or if they have to talk about it, if they must talk about it, they've changed their tune. They say, well, she needs to be heard, but she's been heard. Okay, so move on. 2 years ago, it was, she needs to be heard and believed. Now she's had her hearing and we don't believe her. And Joe Biden's record on women has been impeccable. So let's go forward. Forget about these allegations. Another reason they're really happy to see this state of eternal lockdown. It's so that they can demand changes in the way Americans vote come election time. They really want to see some kind of electronic voting or voting by mail, because it gives the radical left a lot more opportunities to cheat. Let's just call it what it is. It makes it easier to cheat when you can send in all these ballots through the mail, when you don't have to actually show up at a voting booth. Gives them a better opportunity to win. Just think about, not even just this year, but the years ahead. We've talked about the Russians and the Chinese and the way that they're viewing the United States. Is this all it takes to shut everything down? But again, what's the radical left thinking too? They're looking at this as well, saying, wow, I never knew it would be this easy to dispense with the Bill of Rights? Really? And that's the last point that I had here. The reason why the eternal lockdown crowd is so happy. They love the lockdown. They love the regulations because they're socialist totalitarians at heart. They love the strong arm of the police state. They love the Chinese communist state tactics. Mass surveillance, it's right down their alley. Neighbors who snitch on you. Moms being arrested in the park. Funeral processions being broken up and dispersed. You go back home. Suspension of civil liberties. Is this all it took? You have ordinary Americans by the millions under house arrest. In truth, this is a leftist utopian fantasy that's come true for the radicals. This is right out of Rules for Radicals, I presume. Again, how many of them ever thought it would be this easy to suspend the Bill of Rights for all of the ordinary Americans? Of course, the ones in power, they can go to the gym, they can drive across town to walk at their favorite park. Or they, in the case of Barack Obama, he can take his security detail across Virginia to go to his golf course last weekend. That's essential. But for the rest of us, for the sheeple, you stay inside. You don't leave the house. And big government will take care of you. Massive government. A massive expansion of government. That's what we've seen in the last few weeks. Unlimited federal spending. Do you think the radical left likes to see that? They've talked about universal health care. They've talked about guaranteed income. I think Nancy Pelosi brought that up yesterday or the day before. Guaranteed income. Everybody just working for the government. And by working, I mean just getting a paycheck. The longer these things are locked down, the longer society is locked down, the longer the economy is ground to a halt, the more people are going to be depending on the government, the more they're going to be depending on government programs. And that's just the way the radical left wants it. Another way to look at this, too, is that Satan is using this crisis to successfully advance his communist agenda in our nations. This is something that Herbert Armstrong talked about 3/4 of a century ago. And there's a chapter in our booklet, He Was Right, that discusses the communist infiltration into the United States. As I say, it makes the affair back in 1949 and 1950 seem like child's play when you think about how far-reaching the influence is today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email some feedback, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Over, what would it be, 3,000 abortions worldwide just since we started this program. Stunning, stunning death tracker, to be sure. Yesterday on the program, we talked about light versus darkness, looking at it spiritually, physically too. It's a powerful lesson. The benefits from the sun, from getting outside, from breathing fresh air deeply. But when you look at the spiritual light that Jesus Christ brought to this earth, as I touched on yesterday, and how that men rejected him, because as it says there in John 3, they loved darkness. Their deeds are evil, so they prefer to lurk in the dark. And that's been the course that this world has been on during the 6,000 years of human civilization. In the correspondence course, lesson one, I've mentioned this before, it says, the whole world is now in a time of grave crisis and is rapidly approaching a condition of total chaos. We're now in the crisis period at the close of this age. The world does not really know where it's headed, nor does it comprehend the lessons of the past. It doesn't know where it's going. There's no direction. Even out of this crisis, as I said in the first segment, really the goal on the radical left is to just, well, stay in it as long as we can, as long as it's helpful politically, as long as it helps our position. Just stay with this. But what kind of direction is that? Looking forward a few years, or looking ahead to our oncoming generation, our children. Were it not for God's prophecies, well, what are so many people thinking about the next generation? 2 Corinthians 4:4 says that the God of this world has blinded the minds of men to the light of the glorious gospel of Christ. The light of the gospel here is compared to glorious light. It brings light to this dark world. The good news of the coming kingdom of God. It says in verse 6, for God has commanded the light to shine out of darkness. It says, has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. So here's where Paul compares spiritual light to what God sent in Genesis chapter 1. Back then, when God intervened to recreate the surface of the earth, darkness prevailed, but then God moved upon the face of the waters. God said, let there be light, and there was light. Spiritually, though, we're still in darkness. And it's because our deeds are evil. Listen to what Herbert Armstrong said in a, I think this is an old radio show from the 60s. It's clip 7.
Our land is filled with churches, my friends. And we make mention of God in our prayers, but as the prophecies say, we do not put our heart in our prayers. We're full of a form of godliness, but we deny too much the power thereof, as Paul wrote to Timothy. And there's a great deal of that, a great deal of the formal ceremony. But I want to tell you, people are not putting their hearts in it tonight.
There's a great deal of the ceremony, or the form of godliness, as 2 Timothy 3 says. But there isn't the sincerity. There isn't true religion. Mr. Armstrong went on to say this, clip 8.
Right here in the United States, there is more crime. There is more divorce. There are more broken homes. There is more juvenile delinquency. There is more sickness and disease in our hospitals. There is more insanity than in any other nation on the face of the earth today. Now, why should that be? Why should we be the prize winners and leading the world in things like that?
So, good questions. That's an old broadcast, and it's amazing how applicable it is to where we are today. And we've talked about the disease and all of the problems that that's been causing, and then the cure and all of the things made worse because of that. What is it leading to? This morning I was reading through Joel, the second chapter. There were a few verses in the correspondence course that the lesson drew attention to. But just reading the whole chapter, I probably won't have time to get through a lot of it. But starting in verse 1 of Joel 2, it says, "Blow you the trumpet in Zion, and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the eternal, the day of the Lord comes," it says, "for it is near at hand." And so here is God's work today, crying out, blowing the trumpet in Zion, as it says there. You can just look at Isaiah 58 and verse 1 later. Over there it says, "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet. Lift it up." And it says there, you've got to show my people their transgression. You've got to show my people their sins. That's the message. If you're looking for God's true church, then that's the message you're going to find. Because here again, John 3 says that Jesus came into this world as a light to the world. But men rejected that light. In fact, they crucified the Son of God because they loved darkness. They loved darkness because their deeds were evil. Well, that darkness is about to descend upon us again in a literal sense, in the physical sense. Because of this destruction, because of all those sins that Mr. Armstrong rattled off, it's leading to an explosion like this world has never seen. Verse 2, it says, "A day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains," it says, "a great people and a strong, there has not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations." This is what's coming. This is an end-time prophecy. This takes you right through the tribulation to the very end of it, that great and dreadful day of the Lord. This is real. This is reality. This is now just ahead of us. Mr. Armstrong went on to say this in that same broadcast, clip 10.
You're part of this nation, every one of you listening to me. Why don't you look into that looking glass and see how your life is and see whether you're living the right way? There is a way that seems right to a man. That's the way of death. There is another way that is God's way, the way of God's laws, the way of living by every word of God. That'll make you happy in your home. That'll make you happy as a citizen of the United States. And if we all begin to live that way, my friends, we're going to have a wonderful, happy nation.
He says, look at your own life. Look at your way of living, there is a way that brings happiness. Even in this dark age that we're in, even in this present evil world. But you've got to take it upon yourself as an individual, because we're not seeing nations turning their hearts to God. That's why this kind of correction is coming. I heard a lecture recently by Joel Hilliker, who broadcasts on the Trumpet Hour, talking about the Great Tribulation and how that God sends this to get people to turn to Him, to repent of their sins. It's a last resort. God is a God of love and mercy. He wants to see us turn to Him before this darkness and gloominess sets in. And Joel brings this out. Joel, the prophet here, he brings this out in chapter 2, verse 10. It says, "The earth shall quake before them, the heavens shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining." That's Joel 2 and verse 10. Most of this chapter is about the day of the Lord, which immediately precedes the return of Jesus Christ. So this advances to the end of the Great Tribulation period. And you have all of these destructive means, nuclear bombs, devastating weapons of warfare, enveloping this earth in a thick cloud of darkness. It says in verse 11, "And the Lord shall utter His voice before His army, for His camp is very great, for He is strong that executes His word. For the day of the Lord," it says, "is great and terrible," very terrible, "and who can abide it?" Who's going to be able to survive this? Who's going to be able to survive this kind of destruction? Well, God gives us a helpful admonition. If you keep reading, verse 12, it says, "Therefore also now, saith the Eternal, turn you even to Me with all your heart, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with mourning, and rend your heart, and not your garments, and turn unto the Eternal your God, for He is gracious." Listen to this. This verse, this beautiful verse, right in the midst of this chapter that's mostly about the day of the Lord. It says God is gracious and merciful. He's slow to anger. He's of great kindness and repents Him of the evil. So here is God's instruction. Here is God's admonition. He says, turn you. He says, rend your heart. He says, I am loving and gracious and merciful. I'm slow to anger. Well, we've heard, as I say, about how the tribulation is actually God's way of mercifully reaching out to mankind, and the day of the Lord, all the more so, that last year of the tribulation. This too is an expression of God's mercy. It's God trying to get our attention. It's God trying to wake us up. Verse 14 says, "Who knows? Who knows if He will return and repent and leave a blessing behind Him, even a meat offering and a drink offering unto the Eternal your God?" Who knows? Apply this in your individual life. Who knows what God might do, even at the last minute? If you return to Him in repentance, there's some people who even listen to this program who think that they're so far gone, or they've just been out in the world too long, or they have too many sins that they've struggled with for years, and that they just can't do anything about it. They just can't turn. It's too late, they think. Well, it's not too late. It's not too late. We're right at the last. We're drawing near to the return of Christ. The tribulation is nearly upon us. But if you turn, even at the last minute, who knows what God might do, how God might intervene in your life? So verse 15 says, blow the trumpet in Zion, sanctify a fast, call a solemn assembly. Here's that trumpet blowing work again. It sounds the alarm. It's the trumpet of warning, and it's also one that calls for a sacred assembly. It's for you listening to this program, hearing the trumpet blast. It says sanctify, set apart a fast, call for a solemn assembly. Bring people together in worship toward God. Verse 16 says, gather the people, sanctify the congregation, assemble the elders, gather the children. And those that suck the breasts, it says, let the bridegroom go forth of his chamber and the bride out of her closet. You see, sometimes it is important, it's crucial to just set aside fleshly desires or whatever it might be to come together in fasting and prayers to God, to be in an attitude of worshiping God day in and day out. Well, the next verse is a really cool verse as well about the role of the priest in interceding for the people of God as well. It is, after all, a family, the family of God. The true gospel is the gospel of the soon coming kingdom of God, which is the family of God, administering God's government over all the earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.